New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing.
The SiteShed podcast is made possible because of Tradie Web Guys, creators of beautiful websites designed specifically for tradies and contractors. If you're tired of dealing with web designers that have no idea about your industry, then head across to tradiewebguys.com.au and reach out. Like many companies from all over the place, you'll be very glad you did. This is episode 99 of Toolbox Talks on the SiteShed. Joining us today with a From A to B with Todd Redding from Charette Venture Group out of Iowa in the USA. Enjoy.
Giving tradies and contractors around the globe the tools to run a modern business. You're listening to Toolbox Talks from the SiteShed. Now here's your host, Matt Jones.
Todd Redding, welcome to the SiteShed. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we are calling you all the way from Colorado, I believe.
No, I'm actually in Iowa.
You're in Iowa?
Yeah, I am.
Whoa. Okay. I don't think we've had a guest from Iowa yet.
And that doesn't surprise me.
If we did, you probably know him, right?
It could be.
So for our Aussie audience, where is Iowa?
Iowa is right in the heart of the Midwest. I mean, we are just south of Minnesota.
Yep.
East of Nebraska, west of Illinois, so right in the center of the country.
Okay.
And we kind of sit in the northern half of the Midwest, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we get nice cool Canadian air coming down across our state for the winter. So we have some pretty serious winters and beautiful summers.
And how far are you guys from Cleveland?
No, Cleveland would be quite a ways. We're about a 4.5 hour drive west of Chicago.
Okay. Oh, so you're a Cubs fan.
Almost straight. Yeah, we are Cubs fans. Straight north from Kansas City.
Yep.
Straight east of Omaha.
You are in baseball country.
We are in baseball country.
And so who's your, obviously we're in playoffs now, we're coming up to postseason. Who are you on the wagon for? Is it Chicago Cubs?
Yeah, well, definitely my wife leads the Cubs fan audience. She is from Indiana and lifelong Cubs fan. Her family are all Cubs fans. But the house, we oddly enough, we all are Red Sox fans. We moved to Iowa.
Whoa.
Yeah, from Boston. Some years ago, my son was born there. We only lived in Massachusetts for about 3 years, but we became avid Boston Red Sox fans.
Right on. Well, you'll be glad to know. Well, you won't be glad to know that I'm a pretty avid Toronto Blue Jays fan. So we'll hopefully see in the playoffs.
It's not been a good run. Not been a good couple of weeks for us.
Right on. Well, your name was put forward by Devin Tilley. To come on the show. Devin, I'm not sure if you listened to the podcast, but he was on recently. Pretty cool story Devin's got. And the last question we always ask guests on this show is who they'd like to see on the show next. And your name got put forward. So congratulations or commiserations, we'll see. And you've done some work with Devin in the past, I believe.
I have. Devin helped promote and sponsor our annual architecture business plan competition.
Right.
So they were kind enough to really help us get the word out about that.
Yeah, okay, cool. So your company's called Charette Venture Group. Tell us a little bit about the business, just so the audience has a bit of background before we get rocking.
Yeah, sure. It's a fairly unique story and one that whenever we tell it, people look at us with these very confused faces, wondering why in the world we would do something like this. But we were started really in 2014 by an architect, Matt Ostenick. And Matt had he had started a software company some years earlier and had grown it to quite a success. So much, in fact, he sold it to a much larger company that later went public. And through that experience, Matt saw architecture firms all over the world, really, and recognized that so many of them were struggling with running their business. Many of the architects that he met and interacted with as he was growing a software company that served architects, he just saw that they were really struggling. So when he left the company that that he had started, he wanted to sort of get back to his entrepreneurial roots. And one of the things he wanted to do was start some effort that would really address that problem in the marketplace. So in 2014, he launched the first architecture business plan competition to kind of test the appetite in the space for this type of activity. And he got an overwhelming response, got phone calls and emails from all kinds of individuals saying that there was just such a need for more conversation about how to run a better business in the design space.
Yep.
So in 2015, he asked me to come over and join him and help to start build Charette Venture Group. We didn't really know what that looked like yet. We had some ideas. Matt had a vision, but we had a lot of learning to do. So we spent the first 6 months of 2015 interviewing every architect that would talk to us, every small to mid-sized firm that we could get our hands on. We would interview them and ask them, you know, how are they at running their business? What are some common challenges they face? What are solutions that they've seen? We did well over 200 interviews. And through that experience in 2015, began to build this model of what would a company look like that can address this opportunity. And we also discovered that the opportunity was huge. I mean, in the United States, Canada, and the UK, we estimate there are 60,000 architecture firms that employ under 10 people.
Whoa.
And the overwhelming majority of those are struggling with running their business. They're either underperforming or they're poorly run and they're struggling, or the overwhelming majority. And the problems are very common. I think many people listening to this would understand it. I mean, so many of the architects did not have formal business training in school, and they worked at a larger firm. They decided they wanted to try it on their own, and they got out in the space and started to run their own firm, and then realized that it really required a lot of skill sets that had nothing to do with design.
Yeah.
And so we started forming Charette Venture Group in forming the business model itself in the summer of 2015. And in the last 12 months, we have closed 8 deals with firms that have allowed us to invest resources in them. And then in exchange, they pay us a percentage of their revenue.
Yep. So is it like an equity stake sort of setup?
It's not. We do not take an equity stake in the firm. We kind of map out a plan of what types of services CVG will provide to perpetuate growth. And we have to be real clear that we're there to grow the firm, both in employees and in revenue. And so we kind of map out that plan, and then we negotiate a percentage of their net operating revenue
that's
each quarter. So the model's kind of set up so that the services are higher on the front end and your payment is lower because you're at a lower level of revenue. But as we grow your revenue, you know, then the back to us begins to make sense.
So it's like a win-win.
Right. It's a shared risk model. I equate it to, if you are running a small firm today and I came to you and I'm a business professional that has expertise and skills in business development, marketing, finance, management, leadership, culture, technology, and you hired me at, let's say a small $20,000 a year salary. And as I grew your firm, if I grew you from, say, $250,000 of revenue in year one to $1 million in year five, would you give me a raise every year, a significant raise every year? That's kind of the way I look at the model. And we're a team of 8 people, so we cover a lot of different categories of services.
So is it kind of like a incubator model to an extent?
That's a great way of putting it. It is sort of like an incubator in the sense that we wrap services around the firm and then the firm. Yeah, it is. It's like an incubator, but my team's virtual. They're all over the country.
Okay, excellent. Oh, that's great. Well, I mean, that sounds like a bit of a unique approach to, I suppose, consulting, really, isn't it? I mean, one of the things we see very often in the industry is, you know, all these, there's so many business coaches and consultants and all these things these right. days. But I mean, I love the fact that you sort of got a model built around getting results, and you only really get paid if you do. So I think that's smart.
Right. And I think it's important to distinguish. I mean, we do a fair amount of consulting and coaching, but we also do the work. You know, for a lot of these small firms, bookkeeping is something that they struggle with. So for several of the firms that we have contracts with, we actually do all of the virtual bookkeeping for them as a part of our. We've redesigned half a dozen websites. We're in the process of rebranding and renaming a firm today. So, I mean, we dive in and do more than just advise.
Yep. No, that's good. And I think that's important, you know, having that. I mean, it's one thing to, I suppose, get that advice and get that information from consultants or whatever, but it's another thing actually being able to implement. That's a problem I've had myself over the years with, you know, training programs and inverted commas business coaches. You know, they're happy to give you all this information, but then, like, where's the blueprint on how to get there? I mean, that's really what's going to get you the results. All the information in the world's useless without action. So
right. Well, so many of the firms, that what they're struggling with is not, I mean, it is knowledge for sure, but it's just having the time in the day,
the resource,
to get things done. So we like to bring both to the table.
So offline, you told me what charrette means. What is, just for the listeners that aren't familiar, what was the relevance there?
Well, charrette, the meaning of charrette is a meeting which all stakeholders in a project attempt to resolve conflicts and map out solutions. That's sort of the definition of charrette, but it's a common activity among architects and designers to pull multiple people together and kind of play out how the design project might take shape or how they might overcome some challenge.
Yep.
So it was what Matt chose.
All right, cool. That's a great little insight. Thank you very much for enlightening us as to what you guys do. So, I mean, what did you, growing up, what was it you wanted to do? I mean, obviously you didn't wake up one morning and, you know, this wasn't high on the agenda, but what did you want to be when you were a kid?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wanted to be a playwright. I was an English major.
Whoa, hang on a minute. Really? I'm speaking to a Shakespearean.
No, not at all. There's a lot of plays in my head that never got written. But I did. I loved writing short stories, fiction mostly. And as I said, I was an English major. I had made a decision when I was in college that I wasn't going to continue in the family business, which is all involved in healthcare. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I kind of landed in English and really loved it. But I didn't have a lot of people banging down my door to hire a playwright at age, you know, 22, graduating from college. So I was offered a job to work in the alumni and development office of my alma mater before I graduated, actually. So they said, would you like to have a job where we pay you to plan reunions and parties and golf tournaments and travel all over the country doing so? And
like, what, pay me to do what I'm doing socially? Sure.
Exactly. That sounds like a great deal. And so that began a career in higher education that was really quite beneficial to me. I got to meet some amazing people, great mentors, advisors, moved to a couple of different institutions as I kind of worked my way up the ladder, so to speak. Got married, you know, started a family, and wound up here in Grinnell, Iowa, as the vice president for alumni and development at Grinnell College.
Yep.
And loved it. I mean, I loved the work, but I was a square peg in a round hole. For years, I had wanted to start a business. I would write business plans as a hobby. My wife will tell you she would just about go insane because every week I would come to her and say, I think we should start this. I think we should do that. So I finally was advised by actually the president of Grinnell College. He said, I think you should get your MBA. And I hadn't considered it, but it was a great suggestion. And I started at Northwestern University's Kellogg School for Management in 2003 in the executive program. Actually commuted from Grinnell, Iowa to Evanston, Illinois, which is about a 4.5-hour drive for 2 years to get my MBA. And through that experience, decided that I did not want to work in higher education any longer. I really had a passion for business.
Yep.
and I wanted to be in the business world. So that prompted a major shift in my career.
So did you complete your MBA?
I did.
Wow. Good on you. That's an achievement.
Yeah, we wouldn't be having this conversation if it weren't for Kellogg. It in my view, it's the greatest business school in the world.
Yeah, wow. Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about, I suppose, your transition. I mean, do you have any architectural background in any way?
Not at all. I would have trouble drawing a box. Okay.
So tell me about that transition then, because I'm interested from where you came from as to where you've sort of ended up now. You know, that transition, yeah. Obviously, there must have been a few hurdles there.
Yeah, there have been. There have been several. I mean, fundamentally, I have a passion for business. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to join a family-owned manufacturing company. So when I chose to leave higher ed, I then went to work for this company, worked for a great family that taught me a lot about business, you know, in the trenches about business out of the, you know, and the classroom was fantastic, but I got to work in the, you know, really in the trenches of a really nice sized manufacturing company. A great lesson to learn there is don't become the president and CEO of a manufacturing company on the eve of the greatest recession our country has ever seen.
Oh, wow.
So in 2000, and, you know, I started to moved into that president position in 2008, January, and then just, you know, rode what was some of the worst years of my life and many people's lives through 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
It was good. I say I wouldn't change it, but I can't overstate the pain that, you know, was felt throughout that, both for the people that lost their jobs and the company that lost money. It's fortunately it's on its feet today and doing extremely well. And I'm very happy for them. In 2011, I left to go join a digital marketing agency that I had actually hired while I was running the business, and spent a couple of years helping them kind of transition their business from a traditional web development company into a marketing agency. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met Matt. And Matt was running Submittal Exchange at the time. And we kind of met, got to know one another, and said it would be nice to work together someday.
Yep.
And so he and I started a software company. And
what sort of software?
Completely unrelated to the architecture space. It's a data visualization software for your sales funnel. It integrates with Salesforce.com and marketing automation software.
Okay.
And so we got FunnelWise off the ground in 2014. And as I said, that's while Matt was on the side. He was kind of testing out CVG. And so we got FunnelWise is going today. It's going very strong. And moved over to help Matt start CVG in January 2015.
All right.
Probably more detail than you want, but that's the long, boring story.
Yeah, wow. And does Matt have a background in architecture?
Yes, he's a licensed architect, and he is on our state AIA board.
Oh, okay. So that's like a governing body or an association or something, is it?
It is.
Okay.
It's American Institute of Architects, and he's active. He's not practicing today, but he is licensed.
Okay, so but he has practiced in the past.
Yes.
So I suppose is that one of his? I mean, obviously, that's I'm guessing quite a strong angle for him, being that he has been in the trenches and he understands the business and the industry.
Yeah, I mean that's his vision for Charette Venture Group really came out of his experience as an architect and his experience watching these other architects struggle in business.
Yep. So
he has a passion for this space, a real love for it.
Yeah. And so I suppose what's your role in the business? Like, what do you spend your time doing day to day?
Yeah, well, I'm the president and CEO, so I've got to kind of oversee all of the moving parts. So, you know, we're in that tough spot where we're both trying to build our portfolio and attract new firms to join us while growing the firms that are already in the portfolio and, you know, serving them. I'm fortunate to have a good team that really do very, very well and help our firms in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of moving parts and more every day.
And so with your approach to your clients, do you guys have, is it like a framework that you follow? Okay, we need to achieve this, this, and this in this area. Then we can focus on the next step, which is going to be this, this, and this. And then we can focus on the next step, blah, 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 and all sort of, it's like a bit of an ecosystem there that you attack.
Yeah, it is. We divide the business into eight categories.
Yep.
So we look at our whole model is built around the eight categories, which are business development, finance, marketing, management, leadership, culture, technology, and client fulfillment.
Okay.
And so within each category, we have processes, services, programs, tools, all to help strengthen the firm in that category. So even our review agendas, when we kind of meet with the firm to assess how things are going, they're structured in those eight categories. Our contracts that we sign with the firm are structured in those eight categories.
Okay. And how did you guys come up with that framework?
Yeah, I really have to give credit to Norbert Lindermeyer. Norbert runs a great business up in Canada, and he wrote the book called The E-Myth.
Oh, yep.
So he built off the original E-Myth platform and specialized a book just for architects. And in there, he has six categories that he uses to kind of build the framework. So we took that and kind of built on that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
customized it for our use. And that's how we came up with that framework.
Yeah, wow. Awesome. And so in terms of, you've spoken briefly about the team and, you know, you guys obviously work remote, but how do you go about, finding the right people for your team that are qualified? I mean, I'm guessing you're hiring people that specialize in certain areas. So, you know, it may be client fulfillment, or it might be cultural or leadership or whatever it is. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. And I mean, in some cases we cover more than one, but yes, yeah, we try to focus each person's energy in a particular area, particular category.
Okay, cool. And how's that been from a staff acquisition perspective? You know, how do you go about finding these people?
It's great. Great question. It's almost entirely through networking and referrals, mm-hmm. and, you know, talking with thought leaders in this space. The people that are on the team have a lot of years of experience in mostly in this area. So they have, you know, they know of authors and speakers and contacts that we can tap into. So that's really how we've developed it. And we could go a lot further. There's no question. There's, I wouldn't say holes, but there's areas in our offering that could be strengthened if we found the right talent.
And are you guys self-funded?
Yeah, completely self-funded. So all of the seed money to start the business came 100% from Matt.
Yeah.
And that really covered our first 3 years of getting the model up and running. We are in the process of raising another $250,000 in capital. Today, we started doing that the end of August, and we want to be done. I want to be done yesterday, but we'll be done by the end of November for sure.
Is that through share offerings or?
No, it's through a very simple promissory note offering. So the minimum investment is $10,000, and you make the investment before December 1st of this year. You fill out a subscription agreement, and then we give you a promissory note, and we pay you 8.5%. And we do those in annual payments. So in January of 2018, we make a payment. 2019, we make a payment. And then in 2020, we send you your 8.5% plus your initial principal.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a very simple offering, low risk, pretty decent return. And if you kind of get a sense of what Charette Venture Group is trying to do, you know, the people that are investing are people who really believe in this mission and in what we're up to.
Yeah, excellent. So, I suppose like all businesses, there's always going to be speed bumps and there's always going to be bottlenecks. What's the one thing, I suppose, that you, if you could snap your fingers and fix anything right now, what would it be?
That's a great, great, great question. This partnership is really a two-way street, right? I mean, we can wrap ourselves around these firms and provide a lot of support and provide a lot of advice and get in and even do the work. But the partnership, the firm has to do the work as well. I mean, they have a lot of work to do. And so in some cases, you know, you can underestimate what that means,
mm-hmm.
what the commitment to business development is going to have to be about, what the commitment to marketing is going to have to be about. And that's new to a lot of these firms that have not been asked and pressed to, you know, to do some of that work. So if I could snap my finger, I'd give them all unlimited resources to be able to, you know, to get their work done as well, because they're so overwhelmed trying to do everything and serve their customers as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's just coming to that real balanced view of what's required by all parties involved to move the needle with the firm. That's always a struggle, and you wish you could snap your fingers and have it clear in everyone's mind, and but it's more difficult than that.
Because I suppose realistically, at the end of the day, I mean, you guys can provide all these frameworks and systems and processes and all this, like a bit of a roadmap for companies. And we do very similar things as well. However, it does take work at their end to a degree.
Right.
Sometimes they think, oh, they're just going to bring you on board and it's like the, you know, the magic pill, everything is going to be fixed, but it's not always that. There is actually work to be done always.
Yeah, there is. And it's just easy to underestimate in the world of particularly business development and marketing, how hard it is. You know, it's hard work developing those relationships, and you lose a lot. You know, you get told no a lot, and you just have to continue to work hard at developing those. And most of the firms that we work with have come from other firms where they've worked, where, you know, the culture was almost all referral.
Yeah.
The work came almost all by referral. And, you know, we don't believe that's a very sustainable model.
Nope.
To rely on that as your number one source of revenue.
So all of my builder listeners out there and clients, I want you to take that in. Referral models are not always a sustainable model.
Not sustainable. And, you know, the other part of it is you have to have a business development process. Mm-hmm. You have to define it. You have to really define the stages. And then you have to consistently review all of the opportunities that exist in that funnel and what you're doing to move them forward.
Yeah.
So many small businesses think that they've got it all in their heads, and they totally underestimate the number of opportunities that they're losing because they didn't follow up, because they have to call somebody back, or they... You know, there's a ton of opportunity there.
If you're wondering what that squawking is in the background, it's spring over here and the birds are going ballistic. So just bear with me. Yeah, I know. It's interesting, isn't it? So, you know, all these, like there's so many things that people, I think, underestimate within moving a business forward, and especially from like organizations that come from that, you know, such a strong referral-based structure. They kind of see that, they often use that. Well, for me anyway, they'll use that as an excuse why they don't need to be investing for other avenues in their business. Oh, we're busy enough. We get enough work through referrals, blah, blah, blah. When realistically, obviously this has been paraphrased a million times by, you know, many, many people, you know, when you are busy is kind of the time you should be looking at investing in other ways to sort of hedge your bets a little bit.
Right. Absolutely right. I agree 100%.
Mm.
And, you know, we, in our research, we saw so many stories of firms that would not be active in business development when they were so, so busy. And then, you know, it would come right around the corner and hit them unexpectedly when they realize that next month they don't have any work in the pipeline and they got people to pay and rent to pay.
Yep.
So then they panic and they run out and they do all kinds of crazy business, what they think of business development, networking activities, you know, and they land a couple of projects and then they get busy and they stop doing it.
Yeah.
And it's just this constant yin and yang, and that's not the way to run a business.
Yeah. So tell me, how do you go about like managing, not objections, but managing expectations like with existing customers? I'm guessing, you know, you guys obviously vet companies pretty well when you bring them on board as potential customers. You don't want to work with everyone. It would say take a certain type of business that you guys would work with. Is that right?
Right. That's absolutely right. We have a pretty extensive assessment process before we even get to proposing a contract.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that we're actually going through ourselves at the moment, like just going through a really strict qualification process and making sure that the people that we do work with are people that we actually, firstly, that we want to work with, but then secondly, I suppose people that we know we can serve best, because there realistically is you're not everything to everybody, and there may be certain customers. I mean, we know even yesterday I had to say to a customer, a potential customer, I said, look, guys, sorry, I don't think we're the right contractors for you for this project. You know, I'd recommend going to speak to these guys because they're probably a better fit. So that's kind of empowering too.
It is. It's you know, it's unfortunate when we run into those situations, because there are firms that we think we can help, but we can't help them if they don't see that they need the help.
Mm.
They aren't willing to kind of make the commitment to grow a business.
Yeah.
You know, and accept that that's exactly what it is. It's growing a business.
Yeah. I suppose though it's good when you've got, I mean, I imagine your scenario, especially, you know, you've got case studies of, you know, companies and organizations that you have been able to help. So I guess what gets to a point where the case studies will kind of sell themselves to a certain degree.
Yeah, I think we're still a year or two away from that. Since okay. We're still in, a few of the firms are entering their second year now.
Yeah.
Everyone else has been signed within the last six months. So it's still very early.
Okay.
We have two that have signed this week. So, you know, it's still early, but I think they would all line up and say that working with Shred Venture Group is beneficial for them. It's just, we can't show a 5-year trending analysis.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So obviously Charette Venture Group, I mean, that to me says there's obviously a certain level of venture capital investment or opportunity there. Tell me a little bit about, I suppose, that area to the business.
Yeah. It's almost never the case that the firm needs capital.
Right.
Only one out of the 8 firms that we have invested in was there a capital component.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problems are time management and mm-hmm. other types of resources that we bring to the table. So it's available. It just, you know, if you came to me as an owner of a small mid-sized architecture firm and you said, Todd, if I had $25,000, I could grow our revenues by 40% a year. You'd have to really show me why that's the case.
Yeah.
Because what is that $25,000 going to help you do that you're not doing right now?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just almost, it's not normally the case.
Yeah. Money's not always the answer, is it? Well, very often it is. Very often is it the answer?
It's not. And it can sort of be a red flag if you think it is the answer. You know, it's, I'm not saying that it's never the answer.
No.
I think in a lot of cases, I'm sure there are undercapitalized firms that can want to take on a larger project and they just need some gap funding to get it done.
Yeah.
I think those are fine stories, but it's just, if it's the immediate go-to is I just need more money, then it's not. And quite honestly, I'll tell you, very, very few people have said that to me. Most of the architects that I've interviewed are really frugal with their money.
Yeah.
And it's so much, in fact, that they're not paying themselves
what
they should just to keep their firm in business. And they're not, you know, they're not out taking out loads of debt. We have not seen a lot of, you know, really bad financial practices in the space.
It's probably a testament to the type of business you target towards, though, to be fair. I mean, I imagine there's probably a lot of like really small businesses out there that may be the opposite. Any bit of money the business makes goes straight into the director's pocket and then on holidays in the Hamptons.
Yeah, I'm certain that there are.
What does Todd do when he's not working?
Well, I own a deli in town.
What?
We have a little lunch deli that's open from 3, and I am chair of the board of trustees of our local hospital, which is a significant amount of time. And then I teach a night class on entrepreneurial strategies at the University of Iowa.
Okay, so you don't have much on.
Right, not at all.
Well, you're a busy dude, and you got 3 kids.
I do. And okay. That's really where, I love spending time with them too.
Yeah, awesome. So what's the best advice you've ever been given?
That it's not about you. I think I had a supervisor come at me one time. I was upset with him for something. I can't even remember what it was, but he came down and shut the door and he looked at me and he said, "The world is not about you and you need to learn that now." And, you know, he was right. I was young and arrogant and probably thinking everything had to do with my agenda. But, I say this in an interview where I spend the entire interview talking about me, so it seems a little hypocritical, but but I'm not that way on a day-to-day basis. So I try to think of the other people that I'm working with first and put myself in their place, and I try to be a servant as much as I can.
What's the if you could give one bit of advice to any upcoming business owner or somebody looking to start their own venture or entrepreneurs out there listening, et cetera, what would be the one bit of advice that you'd give to them?
Yeah, I think you have to put yourself through a painful litmus test.
A painful what?
A painful litmus test. You know, the test of the test of whether something is acidic or not. It's just an expression, but you have to really put yourself through a painful question of whether this is the right choice for you or not. And I use the word painful intentionally because when you're starting a business, you can be very excited about all of the things that appear to be fun, the independence and the calling your own shots, and you're going to finally control and you're going to take on projects that you take on and live your dream, you know, for yourself. Those are all very grand, you know, positive things to believe. And in many cases, that's the truth, but it comes with a lot of other stuff that most people don't consider. And so I use the word painful because you need to look the ugly side of running a business in the face. I mean, I've had to look a 55-year-old woman who had been with the company for 20 years and tell her to leave the building. She no longer has a job.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that in grad school. You know, those are the things that you go home at night and you never forget. And you the pain and the pressure of making payroll, of having employees who count on you to make their mortgage payments and feed their kids.
Yeah.
That part nobody talks about when you're starting a business. So you just really need to put yourself to the test of whether you're ready for that or not.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, there's all this glorification of, you know, being an entrepreneur and having your own business and stuff. But like you say, it's very, very, very seldom do you hear about, I suppose, the reality of running a business, you know, all those harder parts. You just hear, you know, the overnight success stories of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and this kind of thing. And everyone thinks, oh, cool, I can do that. Small business must be easy. Not really.
It's not. And it is, as I said before, it's just a lot of hard work. I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I love my life. I love things that I do. I have a passion for business, but it's a lot of work.
So a lot of the directors and entrepreneurs and, you know, successful business owners we have on the show have a bit of a routine. And I'm curious, do you have a routine as part of your day, or like a morning routine that you typically follow, or a habit or anything like that?
You know, I wish that I did. My routine changes fairly frequently. The way I organize my time and my day just kind of changes with what, you know, what is getting me excited at the moment. But definitely you have to have a plan for your day, your week, your month. If you're not planning it out, you'll be spinning your wheels all day long. So, you know, in whatever shape, whatever device I'm into at the moment, it always has some sort of a plan, some serious goals I want to achieve. And I definitely find that the beginning of the day is, for me, the most productive.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's about all the structure I can provide. I also believe wholeheartedly in not allowing the email inbox become your priority list.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's your client's priority list, isn't it?
It is.
That's what I've read somewhere. Your email inbox is your client's priority list. So I think you're right. I think too many people get caught up in their emails. I mean, I admit it from time to time, I do as well. I just wake up in the morning, there's 30 emails, and I just try not to even look at them before I've done something off my daily list of things to do.
Yeah. It can be quicksand.
Are you currently reading anything? Any books?
I am. Let's see if I can. I'm spinning my chair around because I'm coming to you from my library in my house. Because I also tend to have many books going at once and I don't always finish them.
I do that.
So, you know, I'm looking at the ones that I really like. I'll tell you, I love the Freakonomics books.
Do you listen to the podcast?
I do. I do occasionally.
Yeah.
And I did actually finish Think Like a Freak. I was proud of myself. It was very good. That's the most recent book that I've read. I mean, I love the business books like Blink, all the Malcolm Gladwell stuff. It's great. But that's about it. I have a Stephen King fiction book that I started when I was on vacation a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I need to back up because I didn't finish it, but I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And what about podcasts?
Listen to Mark LePage's podcast, Entree Architect.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then the one I've been listening to recently is the 5-Minute Marketing Podcast.
What's his name? Neil Patel.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the Story Brand podcast I found is really good.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. The reason I asked that is because obviously a lot of our listeners out there, well, all of our listeners out there listen to podcasts. So sometimes they can take certain things from our guests and go and check them out. And tell what's the best thing you guys have ever done to find new customers?
Well, the business plan competition has got to be the best thing we do.
Tell me about that.
You know, we started in December, and you can go to architecturebusinessplancompetition.com. I urge you to wait to go there until another couple of weeks. We have been consumed with with serving our investment partners, and we have not updated that site, but we're going to get it updated before we launch the next round of the competition.
Okay.
What we do is, and I know you have an international audience. This has been restricted to the US for the last 3 years, probably will be again this year. We would love to bring this to the UK and perhaps even to Australia. But what it is you register online, and the registration process is very simple. You just, you know, give us your information. And then you have a deadline to submit an executive summary and a 2-minute summary or a 2-minute video. Mm-hmm. And the summary just tells us about your business, your vision for your business, you know, what you want it to become. We have 4 jurors, and those jurors select 5 finalists from all of the submissions. And then we fly the 5 finalists to the location of the National American Institute of Architecture Convention. And this year it's in April in Orlando, Florida.
Mm.
So they come, and then they spend a day in front of our jurors pitching the business plan for their architecture firm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night we have a big awards reception, and we announce the winner and hand them a big check and trophies and promote them as the best architecture business plan in the United States.
Wow. How cool. And does that gain some good media attention as well?
Yeah, it has. Not as much as I would like. I mean, I think it's one of the greatest things under the sun, so I'd like to see, you know, live television there. But, you know, it's gotten some write-ups in journals and social media and so forth. We have about 300 firms that have registered for the competition in the past. And so for us, those firms are all qualified leads for investment partner program. So that's probably the best thing we've done.
Very, very creative guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. And it's, you know, we're fortunate that BQE Software is a wonderful sponsor. So they help us underwrite some of the cost. It's not a cheap endeavor.
No.
But, you know, it's a good lead generator. It gets our brand into the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it in a way that's not, you know, we're not cold calling or advertising or email blasting. We're doing it in a way that people enjoy.
Yep. No, it's very, very smart. What about some tips, perhaps not for yourselves, but maybe for the listeners out there on improving conversion? So from maybe from a marketing or a sales perspective there, have you got any tips on how to win work better or, you know, get a better conversion from the leads you are currently getting?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a sense of some of the things that the firms that we work with are doing.
Yep.
So I'll give you one example. Our firm in Ohio, phenomenal high-end residential firm, was going after a project, and a potential client had purchased a plot of land and was considering hiring the architect to design the home. And she purchased a drone, a really high-end drone, and drove the land. Drone footage from above and also going through the trees on the land, you know, down a trail and around. And then we sent the video to us, and we edited it into a minute and 20 second video with some music, very light music in the background, so that she could play the video for the client and talk them through, you know, how she would approach the layout of the home and the views and all, how it would integrate with the land. So it was very simple to do, not a huge investment. And we hope it gives her a good shot at landing that project. We don't know the answer to that yet.
Yeah, awesome. Actually, I've got a meeting just this afternoon with a company that's starting up a drone business. They do, they're roofers actually, but they're launching a drone business, which basically can survey roofs from aerial positions. So yeah, pretty cool. Pretty keen to get cracking with them.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal idea. And the drone technology has become so affordable that, you know, I would encourage every architecture firm to consider it. It may not be right, you know, for depending upon your client base, but it's a very innovative and valuable way. It brings value to the conversation. And we're always talking with our design audience about. They need to sell the value of the design services better.
Yeah,
you know, they do bring value to the table. They need to articulate that in a better way.
Yeah, it's all about selling the benefits and not so much the processes. I think sometimes a lot of, you know, in the building industry, so many people get caught up on trying to sell the, you know, the processes of, or, you know, what it is they're doing as opposed to the result.
Right. Every architect out there, you're all good collaborators. You all listen to the clients. You mm-hmm. all believe in the beauty of design. Everyone says that in the marketplace. You've got to change the language to be more of value to your prospective client, because they expect all of that to occur. It's like selling a car and promising the buyer that it'll have wheels.
Yeah.
That we, you know, we find something new and innovative and valuable to say.
So do you guys typically with your clients, we're pretty big on technology. Do you guys have any favorite apps or business tools or CRMs? I mean, I know you mentioned Salesforce as a CRM.
Yeah, we have our own CRM that we've built specifically for the architecture firms that we invest in. So as a part of our investment, they get access to that software.
Okay. And what is that CRM? What is that? Is it just CRM or is it automation and everything?
No, it's not marketing automation. It really just tracks contacts and opportunities, mm-hmm. and it shows you a visual diagram of your sales funnel.
Yeah.
It lets you set up reminders and, you know, put values with each opportunity so you can kind of see the volume of work in your sales funnel. And then over time, as you track this information, it'll show you your conversion ratios from one stage of the funnel to the next. So that, you know, as you're planning out the next year, you can say, okay, well, if we're going to do $2 million in sales, then our funnel needs to look like this, you know, and we need to build our marketing program around that activity.
That's cool.
Yeah. And if any of your listeners are interested in using that software, you can certainly reach out to me. We are providing it to a select number of firms for free today. We someday may be charging for it, but we're doing it for free and kind of collecting feedback. We didn't build it as something to sell. We built it so that the firms that we invest in have access to a tool that's valuable.
Yeah. And how would you like them to reach out to you?
Just send me an email to todd@charettevg.com. And I'll be happy to take a look and consider sending you a licensing agreement, and then you can get on and use it. I'm going to have to charge something for it someday, because we need to put a little money into some improvements that the current user audience has suggested.
Absolutely.
So we might, you know, we might in the future charge a nominal fee. Again, it's not to make money. We don't want to be a software company.
Yeah.
but we do have to fund future improvements to the software.
Yeah, nice.
I would mention that we also use Harvest as our time tracking software. We love Harvest.
Okay. I've used Harvest. Yep. That Harvest actually integrates with my CRM. So, yeah.
And then we use Slack as our communication platform. So we're all on Slack. So,
yeah, nice. Okay, so what about sort of getting towards the end of this now, but I've just got a couple of more questions. I suppose the one thing in regard to referral strategy, so you said a lot of your customers and clients pretty much have businesses that work entirely off referral, which is not uncommon in, you know, building and architectural fields. Are there any strategies or techniques that in your experience you see working better than others, you know, in order to improve them?
Yeah, I think the number one strategy I would encourage firms to consider is just, you know, really embracing the digital space, and embrace the digital space in a way where it is not all about you. When I say embrace the digital space, I mean build out your website and if you have a blog or you have other resources for users to access. Build it out and build it in a way that it's offering information, tools, and resources that are of interest to your customer.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have all of the processes in place to where the customer can give you their information and become a lead. Create that inbound lead operation so that your digital space should be functioning like a full-time sales rep for your firm.
I am so glad to finally have someone on the show that has been... it says exactly what I've been trying to say for so long. It's funny, I can tell my clients this until I'm blue in the face and they won't listen, and someone else says it and they'll be like, oh, that's a good idea, let's do that. No, that's excellent. So, I mean, we got a very similar approach. We build lots of websites, and I mean, we really build them as a, basically as a marketing platform, like as a tool where they can come, you know, guests can come and they can really get a lot of value and then become part of a customer's database or mailing list, or, you know, become part of their group, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your digital platform should be generating, you know, if you're a small firm, you should be generating 5 to 10 leads a week coming into your firm from your website and your digital content. There's just no question.
And once they, I think importantly for the listeners out there, you know, once people get to your website, what are you doing on your website in order to turn that visitor into a lead? You know, how are you obtaining their details? How are you, you know, leading them to the next step? And that's the important thing. Like, they can come, you can have all the leads in the world. You can spend, you know, $1,000 on marketing, driving leads to your website. But if you're not in some way or another converting them, then it's all for nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And so many architects, they do not provide small steps. Mm-hmm. In other words, if the only thing that we can, the only kind of business we can do together is, you know, several $100,000 or several $1 million project where you charge me a percentage. If that's the only option, there's no way to grab me at a much earlier stage in the thought process. You know, so many of the residential architects complain that the users go to builders first and then they want the builder to hire the architect. And the architects want, you know, to play a role in that and have a relationship with the client on the very early stage of the game. But what are you doing to allow that exchange to happen besides mm-hmm. putting your brand out there? You know, have a free consultation, or have a $500 conceptual design process, or, you know, some way to give the user the opportunity to kind of begin the process with you in that early stage. Believe in those small steps.
Two more questions. Firstly, what does the future hold for Todd Redding?
Well, I really want to see Charette Venture Group grow to a firm that has 200 firms in its portfolio. Mm-hmm. We want to do that in 8 years. And
you got a plan?
Do we have a plan?
Yeah.
We have a sizable business plan. We have a detailed pro forma that we look at every week.
Yeah.
We're right on track. Our goal was to be at 8 firms by the end of this year. We probably will be at 10. We're at 8 now, so we're on track. I want to get this fundraising round completed so I can stop doing that. and so then, you know, if we get it up to where we need it to be, then we hire a CEO that's better than me and mm-hmm. go run my deli.
Yeah, go play golf.
Right. Exactly.
And the last question I always ask guests on the show is, who would they like to see interviewed on the show next?
Well, you know, it's a good question. There are a lot of really good people that we've run into. Have you had Rena Klein on your show at all?
No, I haven't.
Well, so actually Rena works with us, but she's got, you know, I don't know, more than 30 years of experience in this field. And she is an AIA fellow. And when we say that she wrote the book on small firm management, we literally mean
she's written a book on it.
Yeah, it is the Architect's Guide to Small Firm Management, Architect's Handbook to Small Firm Management. And you can get it on Amazon.com. You can get it on electronic version. And it's a phenomenal book.
Right.
That a lot of your listeners may, even if you're not running an architecture firm, you would relate to a lot of the advice that's given in that book.
I am going to download it. What was it? The Architect's Guide to Small Firm Management.
Yep, I've got it here.
By Rena Klein, RENAKLEIN.
It's RENAKLEIN.
KLEIN. Okay. I was way off. All right. Awesome. I will download that. Okay, cool. And I might even ask you for an email introduction, and I might see if she'd like to come on the show and tell a bit about her story.
Happy to do it.
Anything to do with business management, our listeners love it. So that would be great.
Well, Rena definitely knows what she's talking about.
Rock and roll. So, Todd, how can people reach out to you, or what's your preferred method?
Yeah, well, please come visit our website at www.charrette, V as in Victor, G as in George.com. Mm-hmm. Definitely follow us on LinkedIn. We're posting content on LinkedIn all the time and Twitter.
Yep.
And then my email address is very simple. It's Todd, T-O-D-D, at charrettevg.com. And I'm open. Anybody wants to send me an email and talk about this space, or if you're interested in becoming an investment partner, mm-hmm. we'd love to have a conversation anytime.
Mate, that's awesome. I want to say thank you on behalf of the listeners, and thank you for myself for coming on the show. This has been a very awesome podcast. I think we got in a bit of the nitty gritty there, which was good. And mate, I just wish you guys the best looking forward, and I'm sure you'll hit those goals. Keep at it.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I certainly hope the Cubs do not win the baseball. All right, listeners, that's a wrap, and stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you for listening to another episode of Toolbox Talks. If you're liking what you hear, then you can head across to thesiteshed.com, where you can join our community by signing up to our Toolbox Talks. You'll get sent a weekly notification, which is basically a highlight of everything that we've spoken about during that week, along with any other industry news that may be relevant or specific to the trades. If you're enjoying the show, you can head across to iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, where you can leave us a review. That would be fantastic, and all the reviews get read out in the show. Likewise, if you have any friends or colleagues that you think would benefit from the show and the episodes that we create, then please go ahead and share it with them. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Please, if you did, head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Anyway, if you are a project-based trade business and you work in solar or bathroom renovations or kitchen renovations or roofing or something along those lines, and you would like to see some of the results that we've been showcasing in our marketing on for your business, thousands of percent return on ad spend, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 13,000% return on ad spend, please head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. That's tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. It will be well worth the conversation, and I can't wait to chat with you. Ciao.